Grade 5, Language Arts, Part 4. So let's begin by looking at what the child should know. At least at the beginning of fifth grade or by one third of the way through, before we start anything new, just let's sort of take stock of a whole gamut of language arts capacities and skills that you'd want a child to be pretty comfortable with at this age. First of all, are they reading well? Are they reading with expression? Can they read aloud, read to themselves? Are they reading with comprehension? I'm not talking about tests. I'm talking about conversations. I'm not even talking about book reviews, which, like reports, are something that has validity at a later age, a very good thing for some children at a later age, but not yet. It's not needed. The ability to talk about a book that they've liked, to be able to explain in their own words without a 200 word count or topic sentence or whatever why they liked it, that's plenty in our day and age. So comfortable reading, that's good. And to be able to read words in context, to be able to get a feeling for what a word might mean, to have enough of a base vocabulary that even new words don't necessarily throw them for a loop. And next year in grade 6, when they're working with some Latin, that will also help them start to understand more complicated words. You hope that they've learned to do, you've taught them at least to do some letter writing in grade 4. How wonderful if their parents would encourage them to write letters, thank you notes, or communicate things by written word to grandparents. That would really help a lot of children today. Can they speak clearly about something that has happened? For example, something happened on the playground. Can a child, in spite of being angry or hurt or upset or amused, give a clear reckoning of what occurred? Can their deeds be raised up to the level of words? Can their perceptions take on imagery, metaphor, simile, in the ordinary course of things? I would say this is something that you want to see becoming the child's own possession at this age. Does the child know how to use a dictionary? So this is something that they should have learned last year or can learn now. Sometimes children who come from another school don't know how. Be sure they do, because you're not going to help them with their spelling. Do they, in grammar, know tense in verbs? That's something that you'll want to review at the beginning. Do they know the difference between past and past perfect? Can they understand those subtle distinctions? Can they speak properly in the three tenses? Do they know some of the irregular spellings in the English language, as well as irregular plurals, and some of the rules like I before E, except after C? And here I'm saying some of, because you know by now that spelling is, for some children, an intractable difficulty, and that the more you knock away at it, the more stuck they seem to get. So this is an issue that by fifth grade, there's in a certain way not a whole lot that you can do about it. You're seeing the children who are naturally strong spellers, those who aren't. Has a lot to do with recitation and speech, actually, much more than it does with reading. Can they also write down what you have dictated to them? Now, I wouldn't overdo this. I'd say one dictation a month, 10 during the whole year. 5 during the whole year might be enough. It's just your way of checking up on their spelling skills, their ability to differentiate words, and above all, their capacity to listen to you. So that's, you know, very, very important. And then some other aspects of grammar. As I said, tense is very important. Punctuation and understanding the different kinds of sentences. Are they understanding of the parts of speech? Are they clear about nouns and verbs? Do they have a feeling for the subject and the object of a sentence, even the simplest sentence? Do they understand some of the more obscure words like adjectives and adverbs, the big difference there? Now, we'll be going over these in grade 5 when we work with adjectival and adverbial phrases. Do they understand verb forms in all of the tenses? We spoke about that before as well. And can they also work with prepositions, with articles, conjunctions, interjections? Are they comfortable with those, even though they might not be able to name them right away? So this is the tall order. These are things before you go into the basic work of grade 5. You want to be sure that you are taking up these other issues with them. And this is good to do either in a language arts block or perhaps in an extra main once a week, or to do maybe 2 mornings a week in the place of mental arithmetic, maybe 3 mental arithmetic a week, 2 somehow or other working with grammar on the board or in speech. And then you can alternate so that you can do 3 grammar and 2 mental math. So that way you're giving them some variety, but you're keeping them awake to these particular qualities and their need to really be comfortable in grammar and also, as we'll learn later, in mathematics. So this year, 5th grade is not as major. 4th grade, you introduce them to a great many new things. Let these be kept alive in grade 5. You only have to introduce a few new things. It's a wonderful year to review. It's a great year to review everything because of these etheric forces, which, as I've said more than once, are taking that longing look back. So this gives you the time to do this. I also, again, it's so interesting how in so many subjects, and almost the more basic, the more I find myself having to say something about this, to say, you know, things have changed. And certainly one of the great changes that I've seen, and one of the most rapid changes I've seen in the whole Waldorf movement, has been that something that started circa 1990, 1991, I couldn't give you the exact names of the people, but this sort of thing started to go on, that there were a few high schools at that time, Waldorf high schools, and they complained. It was not other secondary schools. It was the Waldorf high schools that complained that the class teachers were not uniform enough, were not standardized enough in the way in any one school they were teaching grammar to the children, as well as math. That a high school math teacher, a high school English teacher, never knew from class to class what the children would know and what they did not. There was a huge disparity in what the children were getting. So, okay, how do you solve this problem? Fire all of those class teachers who did such a terrible job. Actually, I wish that had been done more in some cases, because the problem was they were already back going into first grade or second grade or whatever, And, of course, zero accountability. It's just sort of a general problem we have now. Or work with those teachers. What's the problem? Is there a way that you guys can get on the same page? Why should grammar, which is a fairly cut and dry matter, be so incredibly different? Why is it that the children say, we didn't learn any grammar since grade 5 or grade 6? It could have been solved that way, that there was a greater thrust throughout the lower grades, school to school, as well as class to class, on mastering grammar, mastering language arts altogether. Instead, actually, in some ways, that's gotten worse. And I know how many schools have teachers proofread each other's reports or even bring in a professional proofreader and or editor because they don't trust the teachers to proof each other's work. And it's not just finding typos anymore, it's correcting one grammatical error after another, one spelling error after another. So instead of strengthening that side of things for class teachers, it's just sort of been accepted. And how are we solving the problem? You know already, by bringing specialty teachers in to teach at first 8th grade math, then 8th grade language arts as well. Well, it's really algebra where they need the help. Okay, 7th grade math, no. It's really 6th grade language arts where they fall to pieces. Okay, 8th grade, 7th grade, 6th grade, specialty teachers in language arts and math. And perhaps in your school, 5th grade is already part of that club. Maybe 4th grade. Eventually, it's likely, if things continue going the way they're going, if class teachers don't rise up and protest about this and promise to do the work they need to do to improve themselves linguistically and mathematically, it's just going to be from grade 1 on up. And then we might as well have history as a specialty and storytelling as a specialty, and to hell with the class teacher altogether. Where are the boundaries? Where is it going to end? So I prevail on you. If grammar is not a subject that you love, if your own grammar, your own spoken grammatical English is not so great, then do something about it. Don't just sit by helplessly while one of the greatest and gravest responsibilities that you have to your children, teaching them the word, is taken away from you and put in the hands of somebody who may be perfectly intellectual, not trained as a Waldorf teacher, with no idea about Steiner's picture of child development, and so on and so forth. So please, please, take hold of this subject and boot the specialty teachers out to where they belong. I know, they need their 20 hours and they have families and so on. Yeah, it's the whole story. They get in there and it's very hard to get them out. But put them back in the high school. That's a wonderful place for specialty teachers. They don't belong, at least in subjects like language arts and mathematics. They don't belong in the grades. Okay, new topics in grammar. It's not that much. The most important is very, very simple, in fact, and that is active and passive voice. So, very simple. It takes a couple of days to teach this to most classes. So, the little boy was scolded by his mother, you could say. Okay. Or, the mother scolded the little boy. What's the difference? Same thing is going on, but there's a different way of presenting it. One is so much more active. The other is so much less, that something is happening in a much more passive way, so that the subject of the sentence can be active, can be engaged, or it can be acted upon. So we can have sentences like, you know, and we could, of course, do it in an amusing way as well, to say that the lady scratched the cat. The cat was scratched by the lady. The cat scratched the lady. Okay, we get a very different picture there just by taking the words and moving them around a little bit. There's an entirely different feeling. So the meaning gets changed on depending, it's the subject, is it giving or is it receiving the action expressed by the verb? So the change in the verb changes the whole meaning. If we want to keep the meaning the same, then we have to change the subject so that it accords with the change in the verb. So that we could say that Poseidon's chariot was pulled by horses. Or we could say horses pulled Poseidon's chariot. You notice that preposition by, that brings a great change. So one has something that either is acting or is receiving the action. And you give the children a number of examples, and then very quickly you ask them to change sentences themselves. So it can be something like, Sally ate an orange. How do we make that passive? The orange was eaten by Sally. So now we have by in there and also the use of was. Now we're bringing in an intransitive verb to help us out here. The quarterback threw the football. The football was thrown by the quarterback. The pentathlon was won by the school from the north. The school from the north won the pentathlon. Which is a shorter way, a more active, a more incisive way of saying it? The active kind of sentence. Whereas the passive sentence is longer. It gives us, in a way, a more full picture of something going on over a period of time, so that when the subject of the sentence acts, we're calling the verb an active verb. When the subject receives the action, then the verb is passive. And we can also speak of that as active voice or passive voice. So give the children a whole number of examples about this. Now, this is sort of not one of the major categories of grammatical work. Why is it taught in grade 5 of all time? We could have possibly done it in grade 4 when they were learning prepositions, when they were learning about different kinds of verbs. But here again, it has to do with the particular nature of the fifth grader. The fifth grader is finding this balance. It's a fragile balance, to be sure, but nonetheless, it's a balance. And there's great interest, then, we might say, in the interplay of self and world, of I and thou. Remember, this is the year where they learn about the dialectical approach to philosophy, the way in which the dialectic, the dialogue, is utilized by Socrates on the quest for knowledge. This is where they learn about the Parthenon and how the wind moved through those pillars and created a feeling of something that was neither inside nor outside. How the Greeks loved this feeling of being permeated by the outer and yet also being able to come into the inner. So to give the children a fine feeling for active and passive voice, and to give them the chance to use it in compositions, you know, perhaps to ask that you try in every paragraph to put a sentence that's passive voice, or to write a paragraph that's active voice, a paragraph that's passive. And a lot of this can be very funny as well. And Steiner had always said, it's very good if we can laugh in our grammar lesson. So that's the essential point here, to give the fifth grader this sense of something happening from outside to one, or something happening from within. And this is something that Steiner said was very, very important. And another important thing to do in grade five is direct and indirect quotations. And this is really kind of an issue in our time. It wasn't that long ago that on the front page of the New York Times, pretty much any article that you read would have within it direct quotes. There would be direct quotes from the President of the United States, or the Secretary of State, or the Mayor of New York City, or a prominent senator, or whatever. Direct quote after direct quote. Now look at the front page of the Times, which is still the newspaper of record and considered to have the very best journalists on its staff. You almost never see a direct quote. It's always indirect quotes. An aide who asked to be unnamed said that the Secretary of State felt that, and then we get an indirect quote. Or the Secretary of State was said to have said that. There's always the said that, which does not call for a direct quote. You can paraphrase somebody. Now, one big reason that this is done is because direct quotes carry legal weight. When you put quotation marks around a statement and attach somebody's name to it, that can be brought to court if that is not true. Whereas when you're paraphrasing someone, it could be a matter of misunderstanding. You could have misunderstood what you thought they said. They could have misunderstood the way they thought you interpreted what they said. But it's a fairly gray area. So this is very interesting that what we say, fifth graders, what comes out of our mouth is so important. It has a kind of sacred quality to it. And these small spirals, these two little spirals accompany it into the world as open quote and out of the world as closed quote. It's as though the words spiral into the world and then spiral back out again. We can look at the form of those quotation marks, which, alas, have kind of disappeared from typography. They're so often there in a simpler form, often as two vertical lines. But look at that. It's a little bit like that shepherd's crozier that we saw in the mummy case of King Tutankhamun. If you look at the grade five student work slideshow, the crozier, which is control over the astral body. Do we have control over what we say? Do our words just jump out of our mouths, or do we really measure them? Are they worthy of going between those quotation marks? Take the quotation marks away, and you have much more license, much more liberty, much more freedom, although theoretically you're still being quite true to what was really said. And we can take this situation out to the playground, out to recess time, out to parties where children get very hurt by what they say was said. And I think nowadays with social media and children making all kinds of statements, many of which, if they were older, would be construed as being libelous, saying that somebody said this or that, it's very, very good for children to understand the difference between the direct quote and the indirect quote. what somebody said and what was done to somebody, we see that the active and passive, active is like the direct quote in a way, and passive voice is like the indirect quote. And it brings in an extra word. The word that usually precedes an indirect quote. Now, here I just want to quote to you directly what Rudolf Steiner said about this. At this time, grade 5, try to get the children to report freely in direct speech, not only on what they have seen and heard, but also on what they have heard and read. Let them report as they would if what they say were within quotation marks. Very interesting that he says that. Try to let the children practice distinguishing between telling their own opinion and reporting the opinion of someone else. Then do the same in writing. Let the children make a clear distinction between what they themselves think or have seen and what they have heard another person say. In connection with this, you can also try to perfect the use of the punctuation this entails. And certainly quotation marks are a little bit tricky, where that comma goes, where the period goes. What if you're breaking up a direct quote in the middle of a sentence and all of that? So these are things you want to bring to the children. And also that when they read, though they've probably already learned this from you, to change their voice slightly when something is in quotation marks. So grammar is really, and this is so often Steiner's economy again, it's really dealing with the psychology of the fifth grader. It's a very psychological study this year between the active voice and the passive voice. And we see this also in the political world. Again and again, we hear mistakes were made. Overcosts occurred. It's all of this sort of passive stuff going on. It's nobody's fault. Nobody's accountable. We're all completely innocent in this matter. When indeed one would know if the active voice were used, any number of scoundrels would be exposed in this matter. So it's helping the child get a feeling of this dialogue between I and thou. It's really getting them ready for the new social challenges that they are going to encounter in 6th and 7th and 8th grade. And being able then to, as it were, take responsibility for their own actions. And we know particularly choleric children and sanguine children often have difficulties with this. And also to be able to listen well to what another person has said and to be able to repeat that accurately, directly, or to be able to paraphrase it without losing its genuine meaning. So that's really what's most important. So I've dwelt quite a bit on language arts with you. In part because grade 5 represents a golden opportunity to, for one last time, be able to bring the children's skill level up in a dramatic way. It's much more of a struggle, more like pulling teeth in grades 6, 7, and 8, to reignite their enthusiasm for the spoken word, for the word that they read, and for the laws of grammar and for the way in which grammatical construction of sentences really affects them personally. Because in this year, what we are able to build in their grammar work becomes a scaffold, a kind of skeleton for the cognitive unfolding that we will see in grades 6, 7, and 8. So work with it. Make sure that the class really comes together in their work. Work with it in speech. Work with it in their writing, in their reading. You have so many opportunities this year. Next year, there'll be a lot more content again, in grammar in particular, for them to master. And this is a wonderful opportunity to, again, help the children connect with the word.